This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today I'm with Emeritus Professor Stephen Salter from the School of Engineering at the University of Edinburgh. And Professor Salter, you've had some fairly exciting news.
Probably more exciting if I was in Cambridge University, but they're claiming they're setting up a new centre to repair the climate. And they've said some quite nice things about the work that I've been doing.
What kind of work have you been doing?
What we're trying to do is to make clouds whiter. If you make the clouds whiter, they can reflect more of the incoming solar energy back out to space, and they can slow or maybe reverse the global warming, which is looking increasingly more dangerous.
How on earth would you do this, and how would you arrest global warming? And is this across the whole world?
And we can do it for the whole world, and we can choose which bits of it we want to do it in, to some extent, not as accurately as we might want. Well, you need to understand about the reflectivity of clouds, and this was studied by a chap called Sean Toomey. He found that the reflectivity of clouds depends on the size distribution of the drops in the cloud, as well as the thickness of the cloud and the amount of water in it. If you have a large number of small drops, you get a white cloud, and if you have the same amount of water as bigger drops, or a smaller number of bigger drops, then it's a dark cloud.
And that's why all those dark clouds fall on us as rain then, I guess.
That's right. The dark storm clouds are gathering. It's already in the language, so you should have known that. The next thing you need to know is the formation of a cloud drop. Now, you might think that if the relative humidity of the air gets to 100%, the drops would form, but this isn't quite true, because they need to have a tiny little seed to start growing on, which they call a cloud condensation nucleus. Over land, there's lots and lots of these. There's probably 1,000 in every cubic centimetre of air, so no problem in your kitchen when you boil a kettle, you can get your cloud drops. But over the sea, the air is very much cleaner because rain has been washing it, and there's maybe only 20, 30, 50, perhaps sometimes as 100, but very often 40 seeds per cubic centimetre. And a chap called John Latham, who's a cloud physicist, used to be at Manchester, had the idea that if you could spray tiny, tiny drops of seawater, the salt residue left over after the drops evaporated would be really nice condensation nuclei, and there's quite a lot of turbulence in the wind over the sea, and these would be mixed up through the bottom of the atmosphere. It's called the marine boundary layer, and it's 100 to 1500 meters deep. And he worked out how much water you'd need to spray as these tiny, tiny drops. And he was amazed how little it was to undo all the damage we've done to the Earth since pre-industrial times. You'd need about 10 cubic meters of water per second. And this was surprised how small this was. And I had been working on a project to try and make it rain more in the Middle East by spraying water to evaporate more easily. He heard about this and he asked me if I could make the spray for doing his cooling job.
So the purpose of making this, of spraying the what would effectively be seawater, because it would have salt in it, the purpose of spraying the water would be to whiten the clouds, and then once you'd whiten the clouds, they would then and you've attached some droplets, it would then fall as rain. You would effectively be making rain where you wanted it.
I wanted to do that, but it turns out to be much more complicated. I was going to make much bigger drops and hope they'd evaporate and the salt residue would fall in the sea before it reached dry places. We're not trying to make rain. We're trying to make the clouds whiter. There are lots of other people who can make rain. There's a lot of arguments about whether it's genuine or not. I think it is genuine, provided that you know the right conditions. You can just give it a little nudge and tip it over. But you can't do it anywhere, any time. It's only a few places you can do it. And then it can be quite profitable.
So the purpose of having a whiter cloud is what?
to make the Earth reflect more, to bounce the solar energy back out to space rather than having it warm us up, increasing cloud reflectivity.
And how are you going to spray all this lovely seawater around the place?
Well, you need energy to do it, and you need to be able to do it in different places. And so feeding people and providing energy and things in the middle of the ocean is quite expensive. Traveling back and forward, difficult. So I want something that can stay in position all the time. I need to get energy, and the best way to do that probably is from the wind. So we're thinking about sailing vessels without any crew on board, getting energy from the wind by moving through the water, and then having filtration plant and spraying plant and all that stuff built on board. And I've got to get all this stuff to work together.
You certainly have some very nice drawings, Stephen, here. And I've seen the sailboat. And the sailboat is a bit of a misnomer in a way, because there are no sails.
We don't have textile sails. We have things called Flettner rotors. And if you have a cylinder that's spinning about its axis with air blowing across it, it acts exactly like an aeroplane wing, and you get a big force, right angles to the wind, and a smaller force in the same direction as the wind. So it's like an aeroplane flying, but it's a spinning cylinder. Now, this was thought of by a chap called Anton Flettner, a German guy, and he built a ship. He converted an existing sailing ship into a Flettner drive, and he had a race against an unmodified ship with an identical hull, and he had a race from the Baltic across the North Sea to Leith. And he won the race with the rotor ship, and then he sailed across the Atlantic to New York in 1926, this all was. And everyone thought this was wonderful. He got there in a nice time. And he got orders for 5 more ships, and he built one a bit bigger. He built one of them, and then the 1929 depression came along. Nobody wanted to move any trade anywhere. Oil was very cheap, and it all died down. The idea is being resurrected now, and there are several quite big ships being converted to have this in addition to their ordinary propulsion. And sometimes they can be producing the same power as the engines of quite a big ship, 18,000 ton ship.
So going back to your ships then, they would be unmanned, they would be placed at random, it seems, around the world.
Yes.
To order.
They'd move along with the seasons.
And they would be spraying water out of the nozzles in the back.
Yeah.
And making the clouds whiter, and bingo, we've saved coral, we've reduced the temperature in various parts of the world, and we've saved the Arctic ice as well.
And we can stop sea levels rising too. And the numbers are not really impossibly high. The cost of it is probably less than the conferences that they have. It's compared with the costs of rising sea levels, the cost is zero.
So what's going to happen now? Where is Cambridge University taking it, and what involvement will you have?
Well, the Cambridge University project, as I understand it, is that they want to look at all the different possible methods. And I think it's very important that we should use these in harmony rather than in rivalry. And we certainly do not want to stop any work on cutting the original source of the problem, which is burning fossil fuels. So we've got to stop that as quickly as we can. And we have to, if we can find a way to suck out from the atmosphere the CO2 that's already there, which is going to go on. If we don't suck it out, it's going to go on doing the warming. So we've got to do this either by converting existing carbon releasing things to pump it back down under the oceans, or growing more trees, that kind of thing. We've got to do that, and maybe we have to do cooling as well. We can do that really quite quickly, and you should think of this as an emergency medical procedure to allow nature to recover more naturally. We could probably knock 25 years off the really bad bits if we did this correctly now on its own. So it's giving you time to get all these other bits of technologies developed. It certainly is not a single solution. We've got to keep all of them going.
Well, I do hope that Cambridge University think that your idea might be one of those they put in the mix. Perhaps you get some conference-level funding for it.
It would be useful to have a bit of money. Yes, it does. Engineering gets on a lot quicker if you've got some money. They have said some very nice things about us, but at the moment, the Department for Business and what Skills and stuff, whatever they call it this year, say that the best way to do it is to stop releasing CO2, and therefore it must be the only way. Now, they say we must just tackle the root cause of the problem, and my answer to this is that suppose you've just had a heart attack. The root cause of this heart attack is you've been eating junk food for 40 years. A kind person who knows about resuscitation could save your life, increasing your chance of survival by a factor of about 3. Would you rather spend the rest of your life, which it might be about 10 minutes, having a lecture on the root cause of your problem, or would you like to get a bit of resuscitation done? That argument hasn't made any headway with the UK government.
Well, we'll just have to hope that your argument certainly convinces someone then. Well, this is the result of a long time, though, Stephen. You've been working on this for a long number of years.
I started in 2004 and was pretty well full-time from 2008, I was really writing and publishing. Cambridge is good for this. Interestingly, there's a chap at Oxford who says that the whole thing is barking mad. He said this when he was at the University of Chicago, and Oxford offered him a chair after he said this. I don't know whether this is telling you anything about the selection procedures for Oxford University, but he says it's completely barking mad. And I've written to him to ask if he could correct the mistakes in my algebra, and I haven't heard back from him yet, but we'll see.
I've seen some of your algebra and it looks pretty complex to me. I hope he can answer perhaps even some of them. Thank you very much, Professor Salter. Wish you well.
You're very welcome.
You can read the full-length version of this story and, of course, all our other stories online at www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.